This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. Getting a novel from the pen of an author to a publishing house, then into the hands of a reader. The business of books, later on Cincinnati Edition. Author Gabrielle Zevin discusses her new novel about an eccentric bookstore owner, the storied life of A.J. Fickrey. She'll be joined by her book rep and a bookstore rep to talk about what it takes to sell a book. But to begin with, new challenges for parents and kids, emerging adulthood. Dr. Jeffrey Jensen Arnett and Elizabeth Fischel co-authored the book Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to the 20-something Years. Dr. Arnett is a research professor in the Department of Psychology at Clark University and is joining me on the phone to discuss, well, what Chapter 1 says, the zigzagging road to adulthood. Good afternoon and welcome to Cincinnati Edition, Doctor.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So I was very intrigued from the introduction to the book that there have been many changes when it comes to what it takes to be an adult in this day and age. What has changed for the young men and women age 18 to 29 from previous generations?
Well, an awful lot. I mean, I think we all have a sense of the 20s having really changed as a decade of life. I mean, that's why there is this popular phrase, 30 is the new 20. I think we all recognize people take longer to grow up than they used to. And there are a lot of reasons for it. One certainly is economic, the fact that we've shifted from a manufacturing economy to more of a services economy that requires information and technology skills and just more knowledge in order to do something that somebody will pay you to do. And so that means more people are getting more education than ever before. And then on the more personal level, things have changed too. People do not marry as early as they used to for a lot of reasons, one being that with the invention of the birth control pill in 1964, that made it easier to avoid pregnancy prior to marriage, and that led to the sexual revolution. And by now, over 90% of young Americans are sexually active in their early 20s prior to marriage, and close to 70% cohabit before marriage. And so that's pushed everything out, too, in terms of reaching a stable adulthood.
And this is something that is shocking to persons of a generation who are, well, let's just say I'm of that generation, Doctor. I'm 52. I have two kids, one 23, 24 years old, the other 29 on the cusp of 30. And I know that a lot of the challenges that you say many other parents are facing are outlined in this book. And I realize, and you state in the book, too, you got to look in the mirror because it's just as much you as it is the kids.
Well, a lot of these things did begin with the baby boomers. I mean, they created the world we live in now in many ways, and that includes the sexual revolution and the women's movement, which I think is important in this too. It opened up opportunities for women and made them less keen to rush into marriage and motherhood. So I think, yeah, in many ways, the children of today's baby boomers are living out the revolutions that they initiated.
Now, while challenges with the children, there are just as many challenges for the parents. And this is not just in dealing with the kids, but you kind of point out that these parents are in middle age or going in their own transition in their development as adults, I guess you could say.
Yeah, unlike most parenting books, we focus on the parents' development as well. And we talk about how as their kids are entering this new life stage of emerging adulthood, they're entering a new life stage too, a post-parenting life stage. And it really is a new stage. It really feels to them like a turning point in their lives when their last child leaves home. And even if they don't leave home, just getting past adolescence and getting into this more self-sufficient life stage of emerging adulthood frees up a lot of time and energy for parents that they can now devote to their own lives and to their marriages. Marital satisfaction usually goes up after the last kid leaves home for the obvious reason that now they can have an uninterrupted conversation for the first time in 18-plus years.
Dr. Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, who along with Elizabeth Fischel co-authored the book Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to the 20-something Years, what challenges have you faced with your son or daughter? What kind of tips can you offer other parents? What kind of commiseration, I have started to say, those kids these days a lot, too. Have you? Give us a call, 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org, or post on the WVXU Facebook page, or send us a tweet. And you do talk about, of course, the first thing that pops to mind when people talk about this particular generation are the boomerangs. And I will say, and full disclosure, my daughter boomeranged 3 times after graduating college. So what is it about boomeranging children?
Well, a lot of things are going on when they come back home. The main reason most of the time is economic. They would generally prefer to live on their own. Even if they get along very well with their parents, they'd prefer to have their independence and live their own lives without their parents looking over their shoulder. But, you know, this is a time of life when many of them are still going to school. If they're done with school or have quit school for a while, they're usually looking for a job, but you know what the economy is like now. And even when the economy is good, their unemployment rate at age 18 to 24 is pretty consistently twice as high as the overall rate. So they're more likely to be unemployed, they're more likely to be underemployed and not working enough hours or making enough money to be able to live independently. So there are a lot of good reasons why they're coming back home. But the good news is that it's a surprisingly positive experience. I mean, I don't know what you'd say, Mark, but in a national survey that I conducted for this book, we surveyed over 1,000 18 to 29-year-olds and over 1,000 of their parents, and they were both really quite positive about it. On the parents' side, 61% of them said their feelings about their grown kid living at home were mostly positive. Only 6% said they felt it was mostly negative. That was surprising even to me, even though I've heard parents and emerging adults talk for years about the improvements in their relationship once they get beyond adolescence. But wow, 61% to 6% said it was positive.
Oh, yes. I didn't mind. I was merely stating the facts. but it is very positive. But, you know, then the frustrations about actions and all begin to arise. And, sure. And this is not to do a blanket picture of the 18 to 29-year-olds. Right. It's many different people. You point out more than once, many different people, many different experiences. But you do lay out the stages of emerging adulthood. Please explain launching, exploring, and landing.
Yeah, well, 18 to 29 is a long time. I mean, 11 years, a lot happens during that time. So I think in addition to thinking about it as a life stage of emerging adult, it's useful to divide it up into these three sub-stages. And we talk about launching from 18 to 21. That's when most people are leaving their home for the first time. They're still generally quite dependent on their parents financially and in other ways. They're just sort of getting their feet wet in the world and learning how to navigate some adult responsibilities. And then the exploring period from 22 to 25, they're more self-sufficient, but often not entirely so. Most of them are still not married, still haven't had a child, many of them still in education, most of them still not on a stable career path. So they're farther along toward adult self-sufficiency than they were before, but not entirely there. And then by 26 to 29, what we call the landing phase, most people have really moved a long way towards establishing an adult life by then. Most have a stable partner. Many of them are married, and the ones who are not are likely to be married by the end of their 20s. And they mostly have established a stable career path by then, too. They have a clearer idea of what they want to do, and they've begun to enter that field and make progress in it.
Well, knowing and understanding what's happening was very helpful to me as I read your book, Getting to 30. But I also, it was a great lesson in how to step back, but you still stay connected. And that's how you put it in the book, how to step back and stay connected, because you're making that transition from being a parent to being a friend. And that is something that can be challenging to some parents.
Yeah, that's the theme of the book. That's the central challenge of emerging adulthood for parents. You need to step back. Obviously, you need to let your child get some experience in the adult world, learn how to make decisions on their own, go to job interviews, find a job, live independently, develop an intimate relationship with a partner outside the family, and be allowed to do these things without parents hovering over them all the time. I think most parents recognize that. But at the same time, it's important to stay connected. I mean, I think when parents have young children or when they're first becoming parents, they sort of look at this as an 18-year plan, and they feel like once their kids go to college, then their parenting responsibilities will be basically done. But that turns out not to be true. They're diminished for most people. I mean, when your child doesn't live home on a daily basis anymore, obviously that does give you more time for your life. But it is usually important for parents to stay connected because they're pretty unsteady on their feet when they're first moving into the world. And there will be times for almost all of them where they need parents' advice and parents' emotional support and, yeah, parents' financial support too. It takes a long time these days to reach financial self-sufficiency. And for most people, it doesn't come until at least the late 20s.
Speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, who co-authored the book Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to the 20-something Years. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. And one thing you do talk about, Doctor, in the book that you wrote with Elizabeth Fischel is digital natives versus digital immigrants. The style of communicating has changed, and that can be as frustrating to the kids as it is to the parents.
Yeah, that's a really the distinct generational difference, isn't it? I mean, a lot of things that kids are experiencing today, the baby boomers can recognize from their own youth, but the digital revolution really has been much more pronounced among the young than among their parents. And that can be a divider. I mean, I think parents often find it difficult to understand why their kid would be answering and sending and receiving and sending text messages while they're out to dinner at a restaurant together. I mean, to parents that seems rude. And frankly, I think it's rude, maybe because I'm a baby boomer. To kids, it's not. It's just what you do. They do it when they're out with each other, too. And so it's important to talk about it and try to reach a mutual agreement about what the rules are. Personally, I don't think it's unreasonable for parents to say, you know, when we're at the dinner table, I'd like you to turn that off so we can have a conversation. I think that's something that's reasonable for anyone to say. But there's an upside to it, too, which is that these devices are so ubiquitous and so cheap to use that when your kid moves away from home, it's not like the old days where you might get a call for 3 minutes once a week. Now it really is easier and cheaper for parents and kids to keep in touch with each other daily if they want to. And most of them want to. As I mentioned before, this Clark University poll of emerging adults that I did, a national survey of them and then of their parents, both parents and kids, the majority of them, about 55%, said that they're in contact with each other every day or almost every day.
And
that would have been unheard of, Mark, when you and I were in our 20s.
I have two comments about communication. On Father's Day, the messages from kids have gone from collect phone calls to text messages. And number two, I had to laugh when I read in your book, you know, if you left a voicemail for your kid, good luck with that because they're never going to answer it. I've run into more than one occasion where that's the truth. It's not how they communicate. And you give the advice, learn to text.
You really have to. And we interviewed a lot of parents who have learned to text precisely for that purpose. They wouldn't have learned it otherwise, but they realize that's how their kids communicate.
I wanted to ask, in this survey, as you went and talked to these parents and talked to the kids, what surprised you the most? You expressed a little bit of surprise at the satisfaction when kids have boomeranged and moved back into the house, and they're, you know, 61%, a lot of acceptance of that. But what else kind of struck you as you were doing that?
Well, I was surprised to find that parents they struggle a lot with this balance between stepping back and staying connected. I mean, they still are very involved in their role as parents. And even though their kids are moving on to a new life stage, and they're happy about that, they're really glad to see them doing that. They also, many of them feel a sense of loss at this, the daily structure of the parenting role and how much meaning that gives to their lives on a daily basis. So we asked, for example, we asked on this national survey, the Clark University poll of parents of emerging adults, we asked about various items about their responses when their child leaves home. And in many ways, it was positive. As I said, they're happy to see their kids are making progress in life, and they like having more time for themselves and for their spouse or partner. But number one in their responses when a kid leaves home is that they miss them. And so I think there's a lot of ambivalence on the part of parents when their kids move out. We have this sort of cultural narrative in American society that parents can't wait for their kids to leave home. And if the kids come back, the parents are groaning and moaning. But that doesn't really match with reality. I mean, there are some good things about your kids leaving home. But these baby boomer parents are generally really attached to their kids and have close relationships with them, much closer than they had with their own parents. And they feel a sense of loss when the kids leave.
513-419-7100, Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, talking about Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to the 20-something Years. My son moved out early. He's in the Army, so he was gone in his early 20s and still is. But my daughter was living with me as recently as last year, which would have made her 28. If you're a parent out there, how late did your kids live with you? Were they in their late 20s? Let us know. 513-419-7100. But I do know, Doctor, that sometimes the challenge is dealing with them when they're living in the decisions they make. When you know they're making a bad decision,
yeah,
and they'll not take your advice, you know, how far do you push it before you could damage that relationship?
That's a great question, Mark, and it is one of the tough things about being a parent of emerging adults. I said earlier the goal is to strike this balance between stepping back and staying connected, but that's easier to say and not so easy to do, and it differs. It varies with each parent-child combination, where the right balance is something they have to reach themselves. But this is one of the most challenging parts of it. I mean, when do you speak up and when do you bite your tongue? We conclude from interviewing lots of parents and interviewing lots of emerging adults too that you probably have to bite your tongue most of the time, because there are a lot of things that by the time they get their 20s, it really is more their business than yours.
Right.
I mean, how they dress or what kind of order or disorder prevails in their apartment, or you know, how late they come home on Friday or Saturday night. Those are the kinds of things that they want to decide for themselves, and parents have to let them decide for themselves. I think the hardest ones are these big life decisions, such as what job you're going to take or what education you're going to pursue, or perhaps number one above all of them, who your life partner is going to be, who's that person you're going to choose for your soulmate. And I think that can be tough for parents, because as you put it very well, I mean, you have a lot of wisdom and you could give them such good advice if they'd only listen. But those are things that, especially in the area of their partner and future spouse, those are things that they really will be intent on deciding for themselves. What we use as a guideline for that is that it really is their business, and it's a choice they're going to have to live with on a daily basis and not you. You have to give them space for it. The only exception is if you feel there is something really seriously wrong with the relationship. If you feel it might be abusive, if you feel this potential partner might have some serious problem or disorder, so like a substance abuse addiction, then I think as a parent, you have to speak up, even if they don't want to hear it and even if they won't listen.
Right.
I think
right.
you have an obligation to say something. But short of that, I think it's generally better for parents to let their children make those decisions, hard as that may be.
We're talking about, surviving the 20-something years for both parents and kids. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Patrick from Oxford, you're on Cincinnati Edition. Good afternoon.
Hi, yeah. So one of the sources of contention that I had when I moved back home after graduating was, like, my parents wanted me to save money a lot, and that's not something I was doing. I was kind of interested in buying new electronics and stuff. And I was just wondering what other sources of contention could be found that your guest has sort of come across.
Well, Dr. Arnett, I know you talk about in the book, money is one of those big bones of contention.
Money is actually the biggest. The caller is right on target with that. In fact, we ended up having a whole chapter on money issues called The Bank of Mom and Dad, because it came up so often in our interviews as a source of contention. And I think the caller also is a good example in that if you're living at home with your parents, they're going to be a lot more aware of it. If you're living independently, they won't know what you're spending money on. They'll probably have very little sense of it because they're not there to observe it. But if you're living with them, they're going to be a lot more conscious of it, and they're also, of course, going to be a lot more conscious of the fact that you are requiring their resources. They're paying for your food and shelter and so on, and yet you're going out and buying the newest iPhone, even though the old one still worked pretty well. So, yeah, that's definitely the number one source of conflict.
What else could you offer, Patrick, to watch out for?
Our educational choices, occupational choices, and partner choices. Those are the other ones that rank high. But number one is definitely money.
All right. Thank you, Patrick, for your call. Elizabeth from Dayton, you're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi. I just had a comment about some stuff you brought up earlier in the conversation, and I wanted to share the experience I had. My son, he just recently decided that he wanted to go back to school. He's 25 years old, and he dropped out when he was around 19. And, you know, it's going to take him 3 years to get his degree, and it's a little scary. But I was sharing it with my mom because I'm really happy that he's decided to do something, and she was just horrified because she feels that he's just starting too late, and he'll, you know, end up being behind the eight ball. And it's just such a difference in generations, the way she sees it, like it's too late for him now.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm just happy that he's decided to go back to school.
Well, I think he should be, and good for him that he is. You know, this pattern you're describing is not unusual. One of the things we talk about in the book is how of the kids who go to a four-year school, I'm just talking about four-year schools, not two-year community colleges, of the ones who enter a four-year school, only 59% have graduated with a degree 6 years later.
Oof.
So this thing of this pattern of stopping, starting and then stopping for a while and then starting again is not unusual. And again, good for him for going back, because another thing we really emphasize in the book is that there's really no more important investment a young person and their parents can make than to get an education. It's more important than it's ever been before, because as I said earlier, we've made this transition from a manufacturing to a service economy. And by service, I mean it's things like business and healthcare and education. They're all things that require some kind of knowledge and credentials. And so the gap between the college-educated and everybody else has grown hugely over the last 40 years, and it's still growing. And it pays off marvelously in the long run. Estimates vary, but on average, from my reading of these various studies, on average, the payoff from a four-year college degree over a lifetime in terms of wages is $1 million.
Wow.
So there's really nothing more crucial to your future than getting an education after high school. I don't think it has to be a four-year degree. I mean, I think many people aren't suited to that, and they don't want to just have more school. But in that case, there are a lot of two-year programs or training programs that are specific to some profession, like computer programming or various things in healthcare. There are a lot of things you can do that don't require a four-year degree, but you have to have something, or you're going to be swimming upstream your entire adult life.
Dr. Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, co-author of Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to 20-something Years. Thanks for that call and story, Elizabeth. And Nancy from Eastside, you're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi there. I'm just curious for suggestions. If you know or have a son or daughter who has decided to estrange themselves from you, how to set boundaries to be there if they decide to reinvest in the relationship, that kind of thing.
Can you tell me what the source of the estrangement was?
Well, I think there was tension in terms of what you talked about earlier, when to back off and when to, I know there were some tense things that caused tension, and one person tried to work through things and the other person just cut them off.
I see. Well, it sounds difficult, and it sounds painful. I think most parents and children would find that painful. Sometimes these relationships, I'm not talking about your relationship in particular, sometimes these relationships are not healthy on either side, and I've seen cases with emerging adults where it's actually better for them not to be in contact with their parents because it's a very destructive family dynamic. But in your case, it doesn't sound like it's gotten to that kind of level. It seems to me that it's more like just a misunderstanding or disagreement about where the boundaries should be. I guess I would suggest starting slow and trying to build it up. At first, try to avoid any subjects that might cause controversy or acrimony, and try to build the relationship up gradually.
I will say, Nancy, that in the book, you do learn about when to express your opinion and when to keep your opinion to yourself when it comes to dealing with these emerging adults, and you might find that helpful. But thanks for your call, Nancy.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time, Doctor. It's good advice for many, and I hope people learn to deal with the new rules as it goes along.
I hope so, too.
I've been speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, who co-authored with Elizabeth Fischel the book Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to the 20-something Years. Further information online at vxu.org. After a short break, the business of bookselling, a topic explored in the new novel, The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey by Gabrielle Zevin. She's in town for a signing at Joseph Beth this evening, but in just a minute joins me to talk about the novel, bookstores, and booksellers. Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.